on Saturday Extra to an examination of our recent politically turbulent times, with two thoughtful essayists who've delved into what's behind the high-velocity churn politics, as they dub it, that we've almost come to expect of late anyway. What's happened to change so much since the vastly more stable Hawke and Howard governments, for instance? And is it really voters or pollies and their increasingly professional staffers who need to lift their games? Well, Dr. Anne Tiernan has this week published an essay in the latest Griffith Review called Fixing the System, very interesting set of reads, asking why our political elites aren't learning from their mistakes. Anne's professor in the School of Government and International Relations at Griffith University. And with us too, in Canberra, is political journalist Catherine Murphy. She's also committed her thoughts to print in the latest Meanjin Quarterly in an essay titled The Politics We Deserve. Catherine recently notched up 20 years of service in the Parliamentary Press Gallery, and pertinent to this discussion, that's after starting her career in the public service. So welcome to you both.
Morning, Geraldine.
And congratulations, I thought, on two really thoughtful essays where you both... Your egos were in check, shall we say. You didn't say that you didn't know exactly what was going to come next, but you were certainly ready to ask questions. I loved it. And perhaps not surprisingly, Captain's Call was named the Macquarie Dictionary's Australian Word of the Year, a sort of collateral impact of our turbulent times.
Yes, indeed, Geraldine. It's become a new word in the political lexicon, and it really sums up so much, doesn't it, of centralisation and leaders just being a bit out of touch and not keeping their people on side.
Well, it certainly seems, and there was another one too, Catherine, the 2014 word of the year was mansplaining. It's merged into malsplaining more recently as
our latest
PM's hit his stride. Okay, let's look at your essay first, Anne. Malcolm Turnbull said he wanted to return to a consultative administration with an end to policy on the run and captain's picks. How would you say he's doing so far?
Oh, look, I think it's too early to say, Geraldine, but what was so interesting about his pitch for the Prime Ministership was the extent to which he really came out publicly in a way that Julia Gillard didn't in 2010 to name the dysfunction and the lack of capacity to prosecute the government's agenda that was underpinned by all kinds of problems around the cabinet process, lots of complaints about the performance of the leader's office, about the kinds of advice and support that was coming in to the Prime Minister and to Cabinet. So Turnbull went out, you know, on the day of the challenge and named this. And to me, that was a very interesting indication that, you know, that maybe someone after all this time might be going to learn something about these recurrent problems that have characterised our recent politics.
Because you fundamentally, we should say, sort of flag this to listeners, you think it can be pulled back, don't you?
Yeah, I think it can be pulled back. I think it will be very hard. And I think this is where Catherine's essay is so interesting as well. The resistance to learning and to making changes is actually internal to politics. You know, Catherine will talk about her essay, but she makes some really interesting arguments about democratisation. Well, of course, it's the political professionals who have the most to lose in that kind of situation. So I talk about some of the things that present real barriers and impediments to learning. And so we see a recurrence of the same kinds of problems and this inability to kind of reflect on why isn't this going well for us or why have we been a one-term government in Queensland or Victoria? And they're the same problems over and over again. It's just incredibly striking.
Yes, well, indeed, Catherine, it is true that both of you in your different ways and operating quite separately, I understand, came up... I think it's fair to say you came up with the view, I'm summarising a bit, that it wasn't too little politics, it wasn't too much politics, it was too little well-played politics, that the politicians and their advisers weren't actually good politicians at the art of politics.
Well, it's Anne and I have been engaged in separate enterprises, and the Griffith Review edition is absolutely fantastic contribution to this whole debate around reform. I wrote my essay, I think, basically to try and open up the conversation around reform and to reflect on some of the weaknesses I perceive from my own perch. And in terms of the well-played politics and insiders and outsiders phenomenon that we see at the moment, I think it's, I did reflect in my essay that a character like Julia Gillard, who didn't project very strongly to the electorate, voters were never quite sold on her. She operated in a very choppy environment and she really did struggle to make a connection with the people and the voters. But and so the sort of contemporary analysis of Gillard was, oh, well, that was all a bit of a disaster. But if you actually step back and look at the record, well, an extraordinary amount was achieved over the time that she was the Prime Minister. And not small things, like hard things and quite far-reaching things, policy developments. And this was achieved at a time when the government of the day controlled neither house, which is a very unusual set of circumstances in Australian politics. So it's just sometimes politicians, and Gillard succeeded in that largely because of her mastery of the insider game. She was able to build coalitions in the parliament and, in essence, persuade colleagues, parliamentarian colleagues, to enact legislation that was quite politically difficult, the carbon price being the obvious case in point. And so we need to, I think, pause and look at these things slightly differently than we do.
Well, in fact, what you say, which I think is very interesting indeed, and you draw on scholarship from the US and the UK, that it's actually the backroom stuff that is supposedly so grubby and smutty, shall we say, that in fact they're not good at. A lot of the modern ones aren't good at. It's almost like this, like the smoke-filled rooms, the critical element of nomination processes where you weed out the people who ought never to put their head above the parapet. The politics, the part of politics, it doesn't make them weak politicians. They're excellent at that part of politics, which has to be there for our governance to work.
Well, that's right. Often if you're good at the inside game, you're not necessarily good at projecting outwards to the voters. And so voters look at these politicians and conclude, oh, well, I don't like that person very much, or I'm not really convinced that they're sincere or that they have convictions. And now we see voters, particularly in the US example and also in the UK, flirting with outsiders of various types, because they voters are starting to make a conclusion on the political. Well, they're alienated from the political system, and they're starting to now flirt with alternatives. Donald Trump being the most obvious case in point, but we also see in the US primary race, we have Bernie Sanders, who's kind of an insider's outsider. We have in the UK, we have the election of Jeremy Corbyn as the Labour leader, a person that the sort of political class in the UK widely believes is unelectable. We have these sorts of reactions on the part of political parties and the public that really relate to a sort of core level of alienation among voters.
Well,
that's
right.
Looking at the political system and concluding that it's not serving their interests, and they're right.
See, Anne, I think you said that you diagnosed eventually structural issues rather than personalities. That was you, not a Catherine, wasn't it?
Yes.
But actually,
right.
You didn't persuade me. I felt that, I loved your essay, but I thought, no, I personally think it was more personality written. So convince me otherwise.
Oh, Geraldine, we'll have to disagree. That's terrible. Or maybe it's healthy.
Maybe it's good.
I think it's good. That's
well, I mean, I think it's tempting to look at a Kevin Rudd or a Tony Abbott or a Campbell Newman. And why wouldn't you? But you look at, it's actually about organisational capacity and skills. And, you know, I think Catherine's right that Gillard actually did understand the skills that you need in an environment where you've always had to bargain and negotiate to get your own way. Hawke understood that. Keating understood that. And I was thinking while you were both talking, you know, really it's the political duos and tandems that that have allowed this to happen. It's very hard for a single leader to have that whole gamut of skills and experience. So you need the tandem, but what we've had paradoxically, and maybe it goes to Catherine's point of the outsider, and I look at this a bit too in terms of people's preparation for becoming leader. You didn't used to become the leader after being elected only eight years before. So the lack of a parliamentary apprenticeship and the time in opposition where you actually hone these kinds of skills of persuasion, bargaining, negotiation, coalition building, keeping people with you, communicating and so on, being able to write a speech for yourself, for heaven's sake, and have some policy ideas, those were the skills that were always needed. And I think that's what's changed.
Well,
I think if we look at the leaders whose personalities you're reflecting on, Geraldine, they're the ones who are the outsiders who parties in desperation for their lack of values and core conviction have resorted to win election.
Well, I mean, Fran Kelly said to me yesterday when I said I was going to do this because I knew she'd be very interested in it when I do my promo with her on breakfast. She said, you know, why is it now? Like, why has that occurred now? Now, you really thought about this, Anne, and whether there's something, you know, whether it is related to the 24-hour news cycle. Although I think you make the point. We had 5 PMs between 1967 and 72 as well.
I think Catherine makes that point. Which exposes something really interesting about institutional memory. And this is an argument Laura Tingle's picked up as well. And I think it's kind of implicit in our three contributions.
There's the
presentism.
Quarterly essay.
That's good, too.
I read it over the summer. It's an excellent quarterly essay.
Yeah. So Catherine picks up this point as well, you know, that this instability is not in fact new. So not having this totally present, you know, present perspective is very important.
So let's say, because we've got about 4 minutes left, how we work back from that. Do you think we can, Catherine?
Yes, I do. I think it's difficult. It's extremely difficult because one of the reasons that something's broken in our political system is part of the structural changes that are occurring in life, in culture. Politics has sped up exponentially, and the media cycle has sped up exponentially, and neither of those two developments are particularly healthy for the democracy. And as a long-term political journalist, and I sort of look at the political system, and the political system looks at journalism and thinks, oh my God, how are we going to get out of this, right? So I think it is difficult. I think the key to it is a bit of stillness, which Turnbull is trying to inject into the system.
What did you say? What word?
Stillness.
Stillness, yes. Stillness. Right.
Not feel like you have to get out there and occupy, conquer every bit of dead space in the air, that you've got to be talking all the time, that you've got to be pumping out lines all the time, that you've got to be all over everything all the time. I think a settling needs to occur in Australian politics. And if Turnbull can achieve it, I think it's very difficult, but I think he understands that there's a necessity to experiment with trying to tone the whole cycle down. It's much more complex than just a media cycle phenomenon.
Yes,
both our pieces.
Well, I think you both prosecute that case very well, better than most. I mean, Anne, you drill a little bit deeper to things, and this is very structural, I accept that, the lack of a transition to government, let alone how and why advisors in the inner circle are chosen, the speed with which the Westminster system says, you know, you have an election campaign with this solemn decision by the voters, bang, one night you're in government, bang, the next, mostly, you're out of government, then you're in government, and whereas the US has a much slower transition.
Yeah, that's right. And they think much more organisationally about how you take over the reins of government. Now, this didn't used to be a problem for prime ministers because the public service took care of this.
Yes.
But now that they've taken to themselves a whole apparatus and they want to do everything themselves, notwithstanding their lack of organisational kind of skills and preparation for this kind of thing, it's given them a problem. But I think that, you know, Catherine's so right when she talks about politics strength needs to strengthen its own foundation. And this idea of settling, I remember one of the chiefs of staff in in the book that we did a couple of years ago on Prime Minister's Chiefs of Staff, said, you know, the thing about Howard was he never looked like he was rushed. And that's the thing about leaders who know what they're doing. And, you know, it took him some time to learn what he was doing, let's be clear. And when he put some organisational arrangements in place, it allowed him to do it. And I think this is, you know, why I spend so much time in the essay talking about the importance of reviews and inquiries into why you lost. The Kemp one being really important.
In Victoria, Baillieu-Napthine government.
And if you think about how Labor thought about the Whitlam years, and if you think about how the coalition worked from 93 to professionalise itself, this is what I'm talking about, the capacity to learn. But the demise of the apprenticeship of Parliament and of actually those skills.
Tony Abbott had a long apprenticeship.
He did have a long apprenticeship, but look at the kind of, it was always in this environment of not understanding that you have to bargain and bring people with you. And that's the fundamentals. He also didn't have a tandem to work with because he insisted on doing it all on his own.
Look, we could go on. Catherine, I can hear you dying
to come
in. I would love to go on too. But we're going to let listeners just be tantalised by that and to go to both of your very good essays. Anne Tiernan and Catherine Murphy, thank you very much indeed.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Dr. Anne Tiernan is Professor in the School of Government and International Relations at Griffith University and the co-editor of Griffith Review's Fixing the Political System, out this week. And Catherine Murphy, the Deputy Political Editor at Guardian Australia. She teaches journalism at the University of Canberra. Her essay is The Politics We Deserve. It's in Meanjin's Quarterly Summer Edition.